All right, well, I've got 5 o'clock. Are we everyone muted, Philip?
I think so.
Okay. All right. Good deal. All right. Well, yeah. Good. Good afternoon, everyone. Good to see you guys again. And yeah, we are. So this is lesson 13. We're at the end of this. And so, as I was just saying, we don't really have a review class set aside. So we are going to cover chapter 31 today, and maybe try to use it as a review. Somewhat, but I do want to maybe just go over especially some of the things we learned, like in lesson one, some of the things about the book overall. So I put together this little pre-class quiz, so hopefully you've had maybe a minute or two to look over this, but let's go over these answers here real quick. What's the basis of wisdom according to Proverbs? Anyone recall?
Fear of God.
Fear of God, that's right, the fear of the Lord. We saw that there in chapter 1, verse 7. Said the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, I believe. Chapter 9, verse 10 says beginning of wisdom. So I think same idea there, right? It all starts with the fear of the Lord, and it's through that lens that we can live in the way that we see in the rest of the book. So that's probably, again, the theme verse of the book. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. What's the purpose of the book? You remember that from that first section of the book? Probably a lot of acceptable answers here, but remember what some of those purpose statements were?
Instill wisdom in God's people.
Yeah, yeah, to give wisdom. Yeah, but again, there's several answers here. Receive instruction in wise living or dealing. They give prudence, knowledge, and discretion to, remember, the simple were part of the target audience, the youth. Even the wise could increase in their learning, right? So even those who were, you know, had some extent of wisdom, even they could increase their learning through the instruction here. And he even says to one of the purposes is to understand a proverb. So we read this, we ought to get better at understanding these riddles, if you will, or these like dark sayings, as one of the translations says, things that are maybe hard for us to understand what they mean, but as we read them, we should get better and better at understanding kind of what's being said in those proverbs. So, yeah, just several acceptable answers to that one. What about, can you remember at least two of the poetic kind of devices used in the book?
One is personification.
Personification is one. Yep, yep. Anybody remember another one?
Well, in this chapter, acrostic is used.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one. We didn't talk about that one when we went over this, but today, yeah, we'll talk about that. There's kind of
parallelism.
I'm sorry?
Parallelism.
Parallelism, absolutely. Yeah, that's the other one I had here. And you're right, Paul, and we'll get to the acrostic here today. But two of the main ones are parallelism. There's a few types there. Remember, like synonymous, where two ideas that are very similar are said back to back. And then you also have antithetical, where you kind of have the opposites. You know, the wise does this, but the foolish does this. We see a lot of that. And then we see a lot of, like, you can call it whatever, better than parallelism, where, you know, being poor with integrity is better than being rich with, you know, without integrity. You know, so character is more important than riches. You know, we see those kind of statements as well. As well as there's a lot of imagery. Personification being one, like you said, Paula, we see the wisdom is personified as a woman. We see a lot of, like, similes and metaphors to help us understand what's being said in the book. List the different sections of the book. I'm going to speed through this one a little bit. You can just remember 1 through 9 is the speeches from the father to a son. And then when we get into like 10 through 22 is where you kind of have those one verse sayings, those proverbs of Solomon that really take on some of those like parallelism and the things we just mentioned. And then 22 through 24, at least the second half of 22 through 24, we have the collection of the words of the wise. Those 30 sayings that we talked about last Sunday. And Wednesday, Philip walked us through 25 through 29, where it's this collection of sayings that Hezekiah's men put together, Proverbs of Solomon that his men put together. And then we have kind of some standalone, like chapter 30 is put together by this man named Agur. Don't know a lot about him. And then chapter 31 today is King Lemuel, which we don't know much about him either. But again, this is kind of how you can divide up the different sections of the book. And then finally, name two of the differences between the heart of the wise man and the heart of the fool. Anybody want to take a stab at that one? Just there's probably more than two, or there is more than two, but can you name a couple of the differences between the heart of the wise and the fool?
I'm jumping in because I love this one. The contrast between the wise man accepts reproof and the fool doesn't learn even if he gets many blows to the back.
That's right. Absolutely. That contrast is emphasized over and over again, right? So I put humility and pride, and a big part of that humility is being able to accept reproof, accept correction, where the fool does not. And then self-control was another big one as well, right? So the wise are able to, they're slow to anger, they're able to rule their spirit and control their emotions, whereas the fool is not able to do that. So again, just two of the, I think the key differences when it comes to their character and to their heart. All right. So today we're going to jump into Proverbs 31. We do have a lot to cover, so I'm going to do my best to get through it here today. So Proverbs 31, again, it starts out words of King Lemuel. That's how you say it. And, you know, who is this man? We don't really know much about him. He's only referenced here in Proverbs 31. Some think that this is Solomon. It could be. I don't know if we can know that for sure, but again, some think that it's just another reference, another name being used for Solomon. That name actually means for God, as in like devoted to God. So I think that's part of why some think that maybe this is just a name used for King Solomon. Again, we're not clear on that. It says the words of King Lemuel that his mother taught him. So this is actually written from her perspective. You know, she's going to have some things to say in the first nine verses about, you know, about him being a king, some specific, you know, teachings about, you know, important principles and lessons for a king. And then, of course, in 10 through 31, she's going to have some things to say to him, I think, as a man, right? And finding an excellent wife. So, you know, it's written from her perspective. We have another example of, you know, wisdom being passed from a parent to a child, which we've seen all throughout this book, and just reiterates the importance of kind of that flow of wisdom from parents down to children. This is a mother to a king even, right? So even a king, you know, it was important, the things that his mother was teaching him. And so it just, again, emphasizes that. Again, like I said, the kind of breakdown of the chapter is the first nine, she makes three important points regarding kingship, and then what it means, what an excellent wife looks like, the woman of wisdom there in the 10 through 31. All right, so I'm going to spend just a few minutes on the first nine, and we'll spend, most of the class on the woman of wisdom in 10 through 31. So the first nine, again, I think she has three kind of main points that she makes here. So in verse three, where she says, "Do not give your strength to women, your ways to those who destroy kings." I think she's saying, you know, don't let yourself be weakened by those around you. This might be some support for Solomon being this person, because obviously we know the impact that his wives had on him, and you know, he began to worship, you know, other gods, but that, you know, could have been a temptation for other kings as well, certainly. But again, the lesson is, you know, don't let yourself be weakened by those around you. We've seen that all through the book about the influence that your friends and those you surround yourself with, what they can have on you. And so, you know, especially, you know, if she's telling them that as a king, be careful those who can have influence on you. And certainly there's application to all of us there. So 4 through 7, she has some things to say, I think, about the value of sobriety. It's like starting in verse 4, she says, "It's not for kings, O Lemuel, It's not for kings to drink wine or for rulers to take strong drink, right? So, you know, why is it not fitting for kings to be, you know, to be drunk or to drink wine? Well, you know, because it says they might forget what has been decreed, right? So they may forget to enforce something that they should or enforce something that they shouldn't enforce, you know, and you can see all the dangers in that. It might cause some real harm that way, like laws intended for good and helping the afflicted. You might cause them harm, you know, in your, we'll call it, I guess, compromised state. You're not as sharp, right? And you may, you know, forget what's been decreed. And, you know, I think we can think about ourselves and the lessons we can take from that about the impact that certainly drunkenness or strong drink can have on us. You know, can we forget what's been decreed, you know, as in what God's laws are? Well, certainly, right? We cannot be as sharp in remembering those and being as strict on keeping those. And so, you know, just a reminder for us on the value of sobriety and the dangers that being, you know, less sharp versions of ourselves, you know, could have on us. And then finally, I think in 8 and 9 of Proverbs 31, he's saying that those in high positions have a responsibility to judge righteously and take up the cause of the disadvantaged, right? And so, again, there's direct applications for us. I mean, we're called kings and priests in the New Testament. So, I don't think that this is only for, you know, true rulers only, but for us as well, that we have responsibility to judge with righteousness and take up the cause of those who are disadvantaged. That's what the Lord does, as we see in Proverbs. So certainly we ought to follow after him. You know, don't judge with bias. Look out for those whom perhaps no one else is looking out for, I think is what she's telling him. I'm going to pause there just for a moment. If anyone has anything to add there, again, I'm trying to be conscious of time, so I went through that pretty quickly. But any other thoughts maybe on that the first 9 verses?
Hey, 31 verse 5 is a great cross reference for not addicted to wine as the qualifications of elders. It's another reminder of where that plays.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a good reference there, because, you know, obviously, you know, they have to make decisions, make sound decisions, and so in a kind of compromised version of themselves, it's just not going to be appropriate. All right, let's talk about the woman of wisdom. You know, maybe the most familiar text in the book, again, for good reason, I think. But just thinking about this overall, as Paula brought up, this is an acrostic poem, you know, meaning like, so there's 22 verses here, and so the Hebrew alphabet's 22 letters, and so each verse is a consecutive letter of the Hebrew alphabet, which, you know, makes it somewhat random. Like, it's not arranged topically. You know, it's arranged so that each letter consecutively, you know, every verse or sentence starts with that letter. And this is used, you know, in poetry, Hebrew poetry, some, like, you know, Psalm 119 is organized in this way. You know, each kind of, each section of 119, all 22 sections kind of start with one of these letters in the alphabet. So it's used in poetry from time to time. Really helps, you know, with memorization. Like, we do this, I think we come up with acrostics a lot for memorization purposes. We had our class on speech a couple weeks ago, and a couple of you after the class brought up a good acrostic for speech. It was THINK, THINK, you know, and I'd never heard of that one. That's helpful, though, because, you know, if you just remember that word, you know, it helps you to think about, you know, our speech should be true and helpful and important and necessary and kind. And, you know, so it helps with memorizing, you know, principles if we can remember easy kind of devices like that. So I think it helps with memorization. Also shows, I think maybe there's a completeness to it. So it's like, you know, this is the woman of wisdom, you know, A to Z, if you will. You know, so it kind of, there's a completeness suggested in doing something like this. You know, this, I don't have to tell you guys, I'm sure, but this, you know, this text is, there's a lot of great applications and, I guess, uses of this text. Certainly, you know, great example for women, for wives and mothers, on what to strive for. Certainly for men who are, you know, looking for someone to marry. But this is also really just a great example for all of us of how the wisdom that we've seen described in this book, you know, how it plays out in someone's life. As we kind of go through it, I'm going to kind of use like the topics in order that we covered, and just show how they're talked about in this section, and how this woman lives out, you know, diligence and what how she speaks and things like that. This is really I love how it's situated at the very end because it kind of serves as a good review for teachers like us. You know, we can go back and cover some of those things as we cover what's in this poem. And then lastly, I'll just say that, you know, this is written as the ideal. This is a figurative woman, not an actual woman. You know, so I say that just to say that, you know, husbands, if you're looking for a woman who is this exactly, as a spouse, you're going to be looking for a while because again, this is the ideal and not, you know, this is the standard to which, you know, all of us are striving, women are striving to be, and so certainly look for someone who is striving to be this, but again, just keep in mind that this is the ideal and not, you know, if you're a guy looking for someone who checks all these boxes at, you know, in their early 20s or early 30s or whatever age, again, you're going to come up short there, but again, it's an ideal for to strive toward. I think a lifelong pursuit, certainly, to be this woman. Yeah, James, you have your hand raised.
Yeah, I know you said a lifelong of work. It is someone that over time has developed these qualities that we see, and that's exactly what you're saying. If you're looking for someone that meets these, you're going to be very frustrated. This is someone that has gone through the maturing aspect of themselves, their relationship with God, proper perspective on things. And as the proverb said, use the wisdom, probably made some mistakes, learn from them, listen to, and has grown to this maturity. So you're not going to, like you said, you're not going to find someone at a very young age like this. And I remember David Maxson, was talking, I think Kenita talked to Adrian, and you know, everyone wanted to be this woman of Proverbs 31, and Kenita was just saying, this is a lifelong development process. You're not going to just be this woman like right now, but as you develop, you continue on this path, you will become that woman. And a lot of times women, young women would be so frustrated because they want to be this picture like right now. Right. And it's some growth that's involved and needed.
Right. Yeah, that's well said. And yeah, this, you know, we've talked about a path a lot, you know, the path of wisdom. And this is certainly a woman who's chosen that path, right? And you know, it's a figurative woman, so I guess we can say whatever about her. She's chosen it and she's gone down that path for several years, right? And has grown to that maturity, like you said. So, there's certainly things in here that, you know, you could read and probably take out and say, you know, I need to start maybe being better at that tomorrow. But in terms of being this picture that we see in this poem, this ideal, that's certainly, you said, a pursuit over many years. All right, so let's get into it. Get into the poem. So he starts out, an excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels, right? You know, certainly, men, we can't take our wives for granted. We've seen that when we talked about relationships a few classes ago, that you find a wife, you find a good thing, and you obtain favor from the Lord. You know, we can't take our wives for granted. This book has been, you know, resetting our idea of what is most valuable, really all throughout, right? You know, gold and silver and jewels, they just pale in comparison to wisdom. Well, what about a wife or a woman who has this wisdom? Well, certainly that's just as valuable and far more valuable than gold or silver or any riches. A spouse who is wise is certainly something we should hold more precious than anything else. And I think this is, of course, a great, you know, intro to the poem, because, you know, why is she so valuable? Well, I think the rest of the poem, he's going to really, really spell that out. So why is she so valuable? Well, let's think through the rest of the poem. And, you know, like I said, I'm going to kind of walk through it, not in order, but a little more topically, maybe thinking about the things that we've talked about, especially like those five or six classes in the middle where we talked about different topics, and just think about what we can see and how this woman shows that wisdom in her life. What do you think about the heart of the woman of wisdom? How would you describe her heart / character?
It starts with fearing the Lord, which is actually verse 30. So that's just like the topic of the Proverbs. She fears the Lord.
Yeah, and I should have said that already. That's a great point, Paul. The reason we can use this, as an example and a really, you know, example of how the whole book should be lived out is that because it is centered at the fear of the Lord, right? Her relationship with God, and, you know, how she lives and the choices she makes and her character all springs from that. So that's a great point. I should have mentioned that. Yeah, what else?
She's hardworking.
Hardworking, certainly, yeah. Diligent. Maybe, you know, when you look through this, maybe that's probably the thing that jumps out the most is her diligence. And I'm going to have a couple separate slides just for that, but that's a good one.
I think she's always looking for good that she can do.
Yeah. Yeah, especially and good she can do for others, right? I put humility. It doesn't say that she is humble, but I mean, don't we certainly get that sense from what we read about her humility? She's always putting others ahead of herself, looking, you know, what can she do for her husband, her household, even her maidens or her servant girls. You know, she's even serving them and the needy and the poor. So she's putting all these people ahead of ourselves, which of course, ahead of herself, which reflects her humility. What else do you see about her qualities or her character?
Can kindness go here, or do you have that later?
We can go here. The teaching of kindness, 26. Yeah. We can talk about it both. I had that about her speech, but it's certainly, you know, kindness reflects a gentle spirit, right? That's certainly certainly important. I have here, you know, looking at verse 25, it says, talks about strength and dignity are her clothing. You know, I think that's referring to like an inner strength, you know, like a emotional, mental strength. You know, perhaps sometimes women are assumed to be maybe weaker emotionally or not as mentally strong, perhaps. And that's not the case with this woman, right? I mean, she, adorns herself with strength. You know, she is strong. She's not worried about the future there in 25. You know, she laughs at the time to come. So, you know, she can be steadfast through whatever comes. You know, she is strong. Talks about dignity there in that verse as well. And there's a lot of synonyms for dignity if you look them up. Like honor and propriety and all those things. I think there's like a self-esteem to it as well. A self-respect, right? A quiet confidence, meekness that goes with that as well. So, and again, I apologize. I'm sure there's overlap in a lot of these, but hopefully through all these we can we can cover it. Trustworthy as well. It talks about in verse 11, her husband trusts her, and I'll have more to say about that here in a moment too. Let's talk about her diligence. So what do you see about her diligence here in the poem? Maybe what verses?
Her lamp doesn't go out at night.
Yeah.
She's up late and she's up early.
Yeah, up late and up early, right? Which, do you remember what was said about the sluggard? One of the things a sluggard liked to do? He liked to sleep all the time, right? Like a door hinge. He's just turning in his bed. Just wasting time when he should be working. And we see this woman is the opposite of that. Yeah, she's up late and up early. Certainly. Yeah, what else do you see?
She's going to great lengths, great distances. I mean, she's going to merchant ships, to get the things that are needed.
Yeah, I like that. Verse 14, I think. This is 13 through 15 here. But like you said, she's like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar, so she's bringing in the right things for her family, no matter how far it has to be brought from, right? She's bringing in what's needed to provide for her family. Excuse me. Yes, she seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands, so she obtains what is needed for her work, willing to do it, to do what is needed. Like you said, Lakita, she rises early to provide for her household, and again, not just for her household, assume her children and family, but also portions for her maidens or her servants, right? So, some would think in this situation, they need to be serving me, and yet, the picture here is she's the one that's getting up early to provide portions for them. So there's nothing that's, beneath her, right? She's there providing for everyone who needs it. A few more, I think, references here that talk about her diligence. She puts her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. Again, talking about the work that she's putting in. What about verse 21? What do you make of that? Or what are your impressions of verse 21 there in the middle?
She looks ahead. She's prepared for crisis because it's going to occur.
Yeah. There's some foresight there, planning and foresight. When we talked about diligence a few classes ago, I think it's 21:5, they talked about the plans of the diligent lead to riches or abundance. I can't remember the exact word there. But, part of diligence involves kind of some mental diligence and some planning and foresight. And because of that, again, she's not afraid of any kind of bad weather events or something like that because she's already prepared and taking care of her family and dress them the appropriate way. So I think that's a big part of diligence, like that planning and foresight that she's putting into it. Yeah. And 27 is maybe a good summary kind of statement about her overall. She looks well to the ways of her household, right? She certainly does, right? She's working hard to provide, getting up early to provide for what her household needs, and she does not eat the bread of idleness. A little bit of an understatement there, too, I think. Any thoughts about diligence or maybe any other references here that I've missed? We'll talk about maybe her business sense here in a minute, but just about her diligence, any other thoughts?
It seems special that when she is taking care of her maidens, she's like jump starting their day. And you think about all that moms do to get everybody out the door in the morning, or everything that they do to get the laundry going and the dishwasher going and like all those little things. Like they just get the day jump started in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And that makes everybody else have a more productive day. And it's really a gift that should be treasured.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. It's well put. And just you know, diligent, but also, like you said, get everybody else going, and just a blessing and on the productivity of everyone, perhaps. And planning and foresight, you know, mothers and wives, they're so good at that. You know, I'm speaking to my own wife, just things they're able to foresee about the family and their needs is again remarkable, and I think worthy of our praise to them.
She extends her hands out to the poor.
Yeah, she does. Let's see. Yeah, verse 20, she opens her hands to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy, right? So she's, you know, that I think that's, there's probably a financial part of that, you know, giving to them, but also just, you know, reaching out her hands and not being afraid to do whatever is needed, right? To work hard to help them. To help those who need it. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, good thoughts. Yeah, so let's think about, the woman of wisdom and...
Hey, Jake.
Yes, go ahead.
Lakita was trying to make a comment also.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lakita.
Hey, Lakita's here, but also Florine is here sitting beside me. So she made a comment about the poor.
Oh, gotcha.
Oh, okay. All right.
Philip, that was her making that comment. Okay, thank you, Philip.
Yeah, thank you, Florine. Okay, let's think about the woman of wisdom and finances. And there's a lot to say here about her, I guess, like her business sense or her industriousness, if that's the right word. In verse 16 here, she considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard, right? So she's not a rash buyer, right? There's thought, there's intent. She's considering, has a sense of, I think, whether the value is right or the price is right for what she is purchasing. And you know, it's with the fruit of her hands that she's able to do that, right? So it's not, you know, going into debt, but it's the things that she's earned by the fruit of her labor, she's able to make this purchase and provide for her family. There in 18, she perceives that her merchandise is profitable and her lamp does not go out at night. So, you know, it could be that that saying that she perceives that her merchandise is of high quality. So she knows what she's, you know, making is good stuff, if you will. It could be it, but I think it's just saying that she perceives that what she is doing is helpful for the family, right? Is a net gain for the family, if you will. I mean, that's what profitable is. And so she keeps doing that and working hard at what she's doing. I don't know if this always has to take the form of, you know, making clothing and selling it, you know, but through her responsible dealing with finances, she's able to be, again, you know, provide for her family, and that she does she provides a net gain, if we want to use accounting terms for it. If she senses that what she's doing is helpful for the family. I think about, I'm going to embarrass my own wife here in talking about her, but she is very good at researching purchases, especially large purchases on the internet, and finding what's a good deal and where the best value is, or if it's something that we even need. You know, maybe we have this other thing that we can repurpose, and or maybe we have this thing that we've stored for a long time, and now we have this use for it, and we can put it here. And she's always, you know, working hard at things like that. And while we, you know, we don't track the savings that come from that per se, like maybe we could, I'm sure if we did, it would be significant, right? And so in that diligent effort, what she's providing for the family is profitable. Again, I think that's the wisdom that she's showing here, and what we should take from it. Any other thoughts on that?
Hey, Jake, you know, on her lamp does not go out at night. The amplified version kind of reads like this, but it burns on continually through the night of trouble, privation, or sorrow, warning away fear, doubt, and distrust. I think of a mom or a mother with a baby of how you need to comfort, you know, children and babies at night.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how that it plays into wisdom. I'm not sure about finances, but, you know, her lamp does not go out at night. Just seems like a really expanded version of how she's never failing to, you know, care for others and, you know, during the night when it's really hard to do when you're sleepy and et cetera.
Yeah, that's a great point to be made there too, right? There's never off the clock, if you will. You're right. So that's certainly, you know, could be a big part of it too. Yeah, so in verse 20, she opens her hand to the poor, like Florine brought up, reaches out her hands to the needy. So again, whether that's through her hard work and helping them or whether that's financially. We talked about some of those principles about being generous to others and, you know, the blessing there is that, you know, Lord said it'll come back on us in some way. But, you know, because we are stewards of the things he's blessed us with, we can share with others. And so she certainly does that. She makes linen garments and sells them. She delivers sashes to the merchant, right? So I think it's just kind of maybe summarizing what she's actually, you know, doing. And, you know, you're thinking about this, like, do you get the sense that what she's doing is like trying to like build a clothing empire, like to build this huge brand and become a clothing mogul? No, I mean, she's doing this for her family, right? You know, that's what you see emphasized all throughout this section is she's, whatever she's doing, it's there to help her children, her husband, her family, or her household. And so, again, maybe we kind of sometimes separate these into woman stays in the home or career woman. We have these separate ideas. And again, you know, she's out of the home engaging in these business dealings, buying and selling. But again, it's all for, the emphasis here is on her providing and managing the house. Yeah. I'll open it up. Any last thoughts on maybe her finances or her attitude towards business or wealth? All right, so the speech of the woman of wisdom, it says in verse 26, she opens her mouth with wisdom. So we could just stop right there, and we've covered all of it, right? She opens her mouth with wisdom. So everything we've talked about in that lesson a couple weeks ago, you know, she speaks wisely. So, you know, we talked about all the wise uses of the tongue. You know, we can calm tense situations. We can lift up those who are anxious or depressed and, you know, reprove others when needed. And so when she speaks with wisdom, right, at the right time and with the right tone and all of those things. It says the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. So, you know, there's a kind spirit, and it's certainly, I think it's saying it reflected in the way she speaks. So speaks gently, you know, in a way that does actually have a positive impact on those around her. The gentle tongue provides healing, I think one of the Proverbs said. And teaching too, right? So she's instructing, you know, we can presume that she's instructing related to the ways of wisdom that we see here in the poem. But, you know, great. It's a short verse about her speech, but it certainly, I think, says a lot. All right. And then finally, talk about her relationships. And I'll just, if we only have time, maybe I'll focus on her relationship with her husband here. But it says, the heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. What do you think that means, that he trusts in her?
I think it's different things. I think it means that he doesn't have to worry about what she's doing during the day. He knows she's doing good, but it's also, he can also trust things that he's told her as well. You know, I think there's just different levels of trust there that's all encompassing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he certainly trusts in her character, judgment, integrity, fidelity, certainly. So, doesn't have to worry about when she leaves the house, the decisions that will be made. But like you said, in the things he tells her, like it'll be in confidence and as part of her trustworthiness. I think trust in her abilities too, right? To do all the things that we see in this section, right? Her ability to manage the household or engage in the buying and selling we've talked about. Husbands, we've got to learn to get to a place where we trust our wives and give the benefit of the doubt in those things, because, if we're constantly ones who are doubting or checking up on them, then I don't think we have the kind of relationship that this poem would describe. He trusts in her, and again, I think a big part of that is in her abilities, right, as well as her character. It says he will have no lack of gain. The next verse, she does him good and not harm all the days of her life. So she doesn't damage that trust or harm his reputation. She's a continual blessing all the days of her life. So good times, bad times, she's a blessing to him and not harm. Verse 23 says, her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. What do you guys think about that one? The husband's known in the gates.
What does it mean? Jake, I think it's very important here that we understand that there's not a competition between them. Mm-hmm. When his success is her success, right, and she benefits and is happy when he succeeds. And when that's her attitude, it's a greater, actually, tribute to her. And other people see it as her accomplishment. And that's so important. My wife, if I made a mistake, felt she was responsible for it instead of feeling happy about it. She wanted me to be successful. And that's one of the most precious memories I have.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of competition. It's a matter of each doing what he or she can do for the other. And in the success of each one, the other one is also honored.
That's right. Well said. Thank you, Brother Sewell. Yeah, it's about lifting one another up. It's just a fact that we're going to be tied together. And that can be a great thing. Like I think about, if my wife does something for someone at Embry Hills that maybe I had no idea was going on or had no part in planning. Well, the Gibsons are so thoughtful, or the Shoemakers they're so generous, and maybe Philip, didn't even know it was happening. We're linked in that way, and that can be a great thing, right? It can bring great honor to us. And somebody saying something? I'm sorry if I cut somebody off.
Nope. Jake, yeah. While we're on there, since my wife's not online, she's taking care of her sister, but one of the memories I have just as the kids have moved through elementary school, middle school, high school, is – she was at the schools so much and all the time. When I came up to the school, I was treated like the king. It was once they found that's Loretta's husband, but it wasn't anything that I did. It's what Loretta has done for all these different in the school, for the teachers, for the other kids and everything. It was the honor was given to me. And it was amazing when I walked in the school. It was like the red carpet rolled out for me. I had to go to wind. It was because all the work that Loretta had done in all these through the school, through the ages.
Yeah, and it's a great thing that we can get receive that, right? When maybe none of the credit should actually go to us, but because of our association with her, we're held in that regard. Yeah, Philip?
I totally agree with James' point. I think the flip side is also true, that any woman that has made this list kind of a goal in her life, she deserves an honorable husband. It's sad when a woman has done everything in her power to live out this chapter and her husband is a jerk. Like, so verse 23 talks about, like, he fits there. He has a place there. And so it gives us a responsibility as husbands to carry the other side.
Yeah.
Amen.
I was asking someone recently about this particular passage, and he said that he said, you know, my kids think that I'm Superman, not because I am Superman, but because of the way that my wife talks about me when I'm not there to the kids. And so, you know, he, you know, is known in the gates in his own household, if you will. And I think we can see the application that would also have in the community, right? So because, you know, she wants her husband to be held in this high regard, it's really going to impact the things that she, you know, says about him, and vice versa, certainly too. Things that husbands say about their wives when they're not there is one direct way that we can, you know, hold them up and help others to see them in a high regard. Let me check my time. Of course, it's getting away. But so the last section here, I'm going to read it. We'll close out the entire this poem and the entire book, 28 through 31. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. Such a wonderful conclusion to the poem, and I wish we had more time to talk about it. I'll just kind of point out three quick things. One, that she's praised by those who know her best. Often those who know us best know the things that we're not so great at, our weaknesses, our faults. They've also seen all the best things about us too. And it's those who know her the best, who she's probably had the most impact on, those are the ones giving her praise here at the end. You know, her children rising up, that could be grow up, like when they grow up, they are. I think it's like an imagery of like they're standing up, like giving honor to her, almost like a standing ovation kind of a thing, and just, you know, giving her praise and honor for what she's done and who she is. There's certainly thanks are part of that, right? As well as just the honor and the praise she is worthy of for how she's lived and who she is. And then her husband, of course, praises her, and I wish I had more time to make some more emphasis about husbands and our need to praise our wives. You know, I don't think he's saying, you know, withhold praise until she gets to this point of being this woman and then we'll give her praise. But it's the qualities that we see in this poem that are praiseworthy. Okay. And so as we see those anytime throughout our lives, you know, we really need to heap praise on our wives for who they are. The fear of the Lord is the foundation of her character, as we already talked about. It's sad that other things are, for women, other things are held as more valuable many times. The things he mentions here, charm and beauty, but those things are vain and fade as well. So, you know, the thing truly to be praised is her character based in the fear of the Lord. It's the opposite of deceitful and vain and passing. It's really gets stronger and stronger as the years go on. right? So those are the things that, that should be praised. And lastly, her works serve as a lasting testimony to her rewarding life. I think that's, you know, basically saying give her the fruit of her hands. Like, this is like a reward, a worthy accolade or reward for her, this praise. And, you know, it's not like you're going to have to be making things up or you know, throwing empty praise at her, right? Just look at what she's done. You know, it certainly, the story of Dorcas comes to mind, where when she died, I mean, they're just holding up the clothing, right? Look what she did. This is who she was. And that's what I think we see there in verse 31. And again, I think it's just, it can be a tremendous legacy for women, for wives and mothers. I know we've probably all been to funerals of sisters who have passed on, where they've spoken about things that they've done and the impact it had on them. And this passage will be referenced many times. I remember our sister Kenita's funeral a few months ago, where this passage was referenced, and we heard so many wonderful things. I'm sure just a small sample of a lot of the wonderful things that she did. And again, that was a legacy, and that impacted all of us and was a great tribute to her. And so I think worth our reflecting on. Again, we're kind of running up on time here, and I'll close there. This a wonderful example of, you know, dealing with life with wisdom, you know, and what that looks like. We don't see a lot about how she worshiped God, but, you know, I think we can see a lot about her relationship with God and the way that she lived out and showed a lot of these wise qualities. So I'm out of breath because I talked a lot. But thanks, everyone, for the great class, for the great participation, and the wisdom and the example that you show us.